language.
When a person is associated with a work of art, the art takes on a special aura, and vice versa.
The problem with language.
Dan, what is this for? What is this recording for?
The problem with language.
You know, when I first heard about it, I could hardly believe it. It seemed almost too good to be true.
Well, I can't really believe it yet either.
Look at me. I've never won anything in my life at all.
The problem with language.
Lesson 7.
The second Sunday of every month, 11 to 2 a.m. on CKLN 88.1.
The following public service announcement contains explicit language. The message is part of a campaign promoting active, safer sex practices.
There's no reason to be shy about insisting on condoms.
Even if you know your sex partners really well, there's no way of knowing what their former partners' lives were like.
One of them could have come into contact with the virus that causes AIDS.
So even if you've been in a relationship for a couple of years, it's never too late to start practicing safer sex.
Whether you're with an old friend or a new one, use a condom when you fuck.
These ideas were brought to you by Utility Grade in cooperation with Safe Sex Corps.
Hi, Bob Marshall for the International Connection. You know, I was in Los Angeles recently, and I was walking around, and I thought, if I don't interview Mr. Frank Zappa, then...
Surely I have
failed. Yeah, I did it. 3 hours. Bob and Frank in dialogue. Can you believe it? 3 hours. Right here on CKLN.
Ladies. Have no poindexter. Get back on the ceiling. Stick that where you belong. Get the damn pipe out of your mouth. Your history. You're gone. Oliver North, no secret government for you, buddy. You're over. You're through. Joe Casey, you're dead.
That's Frank Zappa, starting Sunday at 10 o'clock, December 18th, continuing through January 1st, and completing on January 15th on CKLN.
No music this week? No music. I thought I was waiting for the theme music, Bob.
No, that was it.
That's it this week.
That's 10 o'clock, 10 a.m.
I don't mean to be critical, but we have to have consistency. We have to have the theme music. People wait for that bass line that suggests that this is the Church of the Subgenius.
Okay, look, there's been complaints about no files. I bring down the files, and now they complain about the promo, the introductory
thing. No, you've got to have everything here.
I don't know, Mike. It's... Of course, I'm many people, so I should be expected to live up to all these requests.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Mike. What's on your mind? I got a lot on my mind. It's the beginning of the year. I got to lay down the agenda.
I know you have a lot on your mind, and I...
Oh, Mike, guess what?
I, as usual,
guess what, Mike? Can you hear me?
Yeah,
guess what? Connie says hello, Mike.
Oh, thank you.
That's something new.
She very rarely says hi.
That never has.
No, I'm a blank slate again tonight, Bob, so why don't you start writing?
Okay, yeah, I got a lot to do. Opening statement. The future of government lies in the area of psychic ecology.
Okay, and can we just close the door there? We're getting some feedback.
Okay.
Thanks.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah, the press conference interrupted.
Like, there's no light bulb in it, Bob.
Oh, okay.
Your presence is enough.
Yeah. All right, we start now for the theme music?
Yeah.
Okay. You remember how it goes? maybe about...
And then what?
The bass line.
No. Okay. Opening statement, the future of government lies in the area of psychic ecology and can no longer be considered on a merely national or international basis. Okay? Now, Mike, remember when I was talking about the perfect pitch chart a couple of weeks ago, and I talked about the ground after television in the 50s and early 60s became computer?
Mm-hmm.
Computer in the later 60s, early 70s. The computer is ground, and then the satellite became ground after that, and then the second coming of Bob was the ground after that. And I said that Reagan was a retrieval of computer sensibility on a popular art form basis. Well, there was one point that's very important to mention about that, is that any tetrad of the computer will show that it enhances total memory, total recall. All right, so in the 80s, you had, in the latter part of the 70s, early 80s, you had a great nostalgia for what, Mike? What would have been the usurious content response side effect of the retrieval of the computer sensibility? Can you think of that?
I'm drawing a blank.
Again. Well, that's appropriate because there's a reason why you're drawing a blank, Mike. This was scripted, right? It's perfect the way it works. The nostalgia that the computer sensibility retrieves is a nostalgia for forgetfulness. All right? What the Zen calls no mind.
Is that because we rely on the brain, the memory of the computer, as opposed to our own?
Yeah, well, it's kind of oppressive. The computer remembers more than we know about our own selves, mm-hmm. about ourselves. It remembers everything about us. And
so it supersedes our own.
Yeah, our own memories. And so it's rather oppressive, the total recall of the computer. So we kind of get nostalgia for a human pink condition of forgetfulness. And you're an example of that. You're always drawing a blank.
I'm totally forgetful.
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah, you try to be forgetful. You can under electric conditions of percept, constant percept and constant replay forget. But there's nostalgia for it. So if that was a sensibility on the popular level in the 80s, then obviously the political leaders meet that mood, meet that need, and reflect it back to the people as a goal. Like the presidential leaders, prime ministers, act out forgetfulness as an iconic need of the users of the computer sensibility retrieval, right? And so what is well known about Reagan's administration, his image, his presidency, is the fact he slept through most of it and forgets everything that ever happened during it and claims no accountability for it. So he acted out that need for forgetfulness. He was forgetfulness. And that is the main point I wanted to make a few weeks ago, but it's poignant tonight because Reagan gave his farewell address tonight on TV. And you know what he urged? Now think of this. He's going into a private role, supposedly, now. He's leaving a corporate role player, the implications of that forgetfulness. His main theme in the speech tonight was he asked all Americans to start remembering American history. He asked American children to get down on their parents if they don't bring up American history during evening meals. In other words, as he goes into the private role, he flips out of the corporate image, he remembers what he wasn't for 8 years. In other words, he feels a need for, he becomes aware of what he was. He was a fish in the presidential waters for 8 years, and he gets out of that water, and he suddenly has a need to remember. He's not into forgetfulness. So that's a key point to note.
Mm-hmm.
It follows. These tetrads work. All right.
Here he is putting the onus on the young generation as well to remember, or to encourage the elders to remember.
That's right. And he's well, the world is designed for young people. That's mm-hmm. all it's for. It's a universal global college campus, you know, for teenagers and advertising agencies. That's what you realize when you get about 22 years old. You know, and of course, you're well past that age, so you've realized that for a few years, and they're kind of dealing with that trauma.
Yeah.
You're over the hill, you know, you're irrelevant. And also, he's like a mousy tongue, you know, urging young people to have their own new form of revolution based on memory. But it won't work because that is the private role of Ronald Reagan, the private mass speaking, right? So it's interesting what he said in this transition from corporate icon to a private image. Okay, so I want to bring that up and point it out.
Yeah.
All right. Now, This is an important night, Mike, because I've got some big stuff that's going to put CTL on the map over the next few months, and I can't release it right now, but I want to tell a little, well, story, fable, scenario that'll imply what's coming up from Bob, all right? They're having a conference on chemical and germ warfare
in Paris,
in Europe. Is it Paris?
Yeah.
And, of course, there's no such place as Paris. Everywhere is, under electric conditions, is in touch with everywhere else, so there's no time and space locality. So Paris is a nostalgic image of what used to be there, if you use visual space guidelines, right? Also, another point about, just before I get into this amazing preamble, remember I talked about semiotics as an effect of movies?
Vaguely. Do you remember that, Kent?
Yeah.
Kent does.
Yeah, I don't. Right?
Okay, it's
I've been reading the new book here.
Yeah. Okay. So movies are an enhancement of kinetic space. And kinetic space is that space that comes between visual space and acoustic tactile space. I mean, originally we had acoustic space, then we had visual space, then we had kinetic space in the 20s and 30s under radio, car, and movie conditions. All right, that's when the American century began, the Americans being a kinetic, manipulative force, but the cultural zone was headquartered in Paris. The French were the best conceptualizers of kinetic space, and therefore semiotics was a retrieval of nostalgia for France and Paris in that scene of the 20s and 30s. And therefore most of the philosophers of semiotics and that post-structuralist movement was a bunch of guys in Paris in that area, right? So they were retrieving kinetic space, which was possible in the 70s.
What time period would you put this at, the origins of this study, these studies?
Oh, the semiotics?
Yeah.
Well, when they started to reject Sartre, okay, late 60s, early 70s,
mm-hmm.
All right?
Would you call these the letterists?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were bringing back the POBs, the print-oriented bastards. You know, they wanted to give something for somebody to write about, so they talked about sign and gesture, postures of movie effects. You know, photography stepped up mm-hmm. to intensity. And the book version of movies is content-wise... sign language, gesture, posture, but the mode is kinetic space, moving about. That's why semiotics took over the universities. They were in motion, whereas Bob knowledge doesn't go anywhere. It's just on the electric air. It's not using its feet or cars or airplanes. Bob knowledge is apparent under electric conditions and accessible to everybody. It doesn't have to go through the bureaucracy. All right? Okay, on to the point I wanted to make about what I've got coming up. Considering this German chemical warfare conference... Hey, what would Bob do, or if he was going to design some form of chemical warfare or germ warfare? Well, he would think of a way of infecting an enemy population, the pink population, that would not be transported via rats or plagues or insects or some kind of old terrestrial form. Bob would try to take something that the pinks get involved in, and he would somehow try to alter that interchange so that the enemy succumbs naturally. It would seem that bodily fluids, the exchange of bodily fluids would be one way Bob would work at it. But if he was to plant a disease in an enemy pink population and then send in the subgeniuses to take over that country, he would have to be prepared to deal with the fact that his own forces could be infected. You get that, Mike?
You know,
I mean, if you go into an enemy territory and that population is dying from some germ or chemical or some form of disease that's spreading, how are the subgenius forces not going to be affected? Well, Bob would use genetic knowledge. He would program that disease organism to, after a period of time, flip and diminish and actually build up a protective mechanism for those who came in touch with it. All right? So if he picked something that was designed to affect the immunity system, all right, the immune system, You would find that the subgeniuses would move in after the enemy and the pinks have been decimated. Not totally. You can't kill them. But you want to, destabilize and weaken them considerably and then have it. How could you do it? You have to dissipate the effect of the destruction, temporary destruction of the immune system, so that those who've been affected in the enemy population can survive, and at the same time not affect the subgenius forces when they come in. So the disease would be programmed to be lethal, be quite destructive and incapacitating at first. But then there would be noticed that the disease would flip, the programmed genetic organism would flip and change into a softer, more benign element, and actually would re-enhance the immunity system. Now, that is how Bob would use immune warfare. All right? And do you have any thoughts on that so far, what I'm getting at?
I'm just not sure in what you're leading to and why you're bringing this rather distasteful topic up.
How is it distasteful? You mean the idea of Bob going to war?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that Bob would do it this way, but I'm trying to show you how Bob, if he had to go to war, he would bring up a situation.
It's purely hypothetical.
Yeah, purely hypothetical, how Bob would do it. Now, of course, Bob wasn't in control of the Secret Council of Ten. Therefore, a lot of the Bob knowledge was hijacked beforehand. So I'm trying to suggest this may have been a way certain warfare may have been carried out. So, if that destabilizing virus is quite potent for a while, and then it appears that the virus is weakening, after a few years, if it was used in some way, accidentally, or maybe on purpose, but it got out of hand, if it started to change, then that would show that maybe it was intended on a military basis to do that, to go out, destabilize, incapacitate, and then weaken. All right? So that should get the subgenius in pink out here and there thinking about what I might be talking about in a few months. I've got some big news, big information. I've been instructed by my own outer self to express this much at this point to start off the year. I would like you to... Do you understand as much of what I'm saying? I mean, you get what... What is the basic point of making about a potential warfare instrument, on a genetic level, chemical virus warfare level? What's the basic pattern I'm saying that would be unique to the way Bob would do it?
I'm not sure.
I think, did I say that the virus would contain an inherent reversal in itself?
You may have said that.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
I may not have been listening.
Right. Well, you have to handle the machines, the phones, and that.
Yeah.
But basically, that's what I'm saying. That if someone was going to use a virus to infect people, they would have to program a reversible effect in it so that your forces would not be affected by the virus when they invaded enemy territory. All right? So that's the basic point I'm making. So watch out for how that unfolds in whatever source of information you have access to, and then Bob will further elaborate later. All right? So I just wanted to say that GKLN's going to have something big in a short while.
Can you hint at all as to what...
That was the hint. I think you know what I'm talking about.
I have an idea.
Yeah, you have an idea what I'm talking about. And I got to be careful with it. But I'm just telling you that the key point in it has never been said before, this reversal factor.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The future of government lies in the area of psychic ecology and can no longer be considered on a merely national or international basis. That implies solar government. But it's not a government in one place. I mean, world government is obsolete under those conditions, so therefore world government will come in. Now, there's been some complaints about not enough files. I brought some files in from former Secret Council 10 meetings. Is it okay, Mike? Should I go into a little bit?
Please do.
Yeah. All right. Okay, there's been some questions at former Secret Council 10 meetings on the history of Bigfoot. You remember him? And back in 83, we had a meeting, and one of the little feet brought up the point that in Eureka, California, a 23-year-old woman was allegedly abducted in the Salmon Mountains by the legendary Bigfoot. Since then, she had been found, but wouldn't confirm or deny the story. So they asked me at this meeting to tell them more about Bigfoot, where he came from, why is he so elusive, what he is, and whether they actually can or do carry off human entities as reported. And this is the transcript of what Bob said at that meeting in 1983. Bob indicated the last question shall be answered first. He suggested this is negative. They do not carry off human beings. That these entities, known as Bigfeet or Bigfoot, do not care to move too closely to humans on the outer surface of the earth, especially towards pinks. Bob suggested these entities having great karma to work off, yet fully aware of their karma and very lonely entities. Bob indicated these entities having a type of consciousness which allows them to know precisely where any other human is, and pink, and subgenius, within a 2-mile area of their being, and can move away from these pinks very easily through that psychic understanding. Bob indicated these entities are from that planet which existed between Jupiter and Mars known as Maldek. These entities, Bigfoot, as having extremely high beings, were high beings in that civilization on Maldek, having great responsibility, misusing that responsibility, and in that misuse did lead to the devastation of that planet known as Maldek between Jupiter and Mars. Bob indicated this occurring approximately 3 million years ago. He indicated that the movement of these entities through states of reincarnation, as these souls moved into the Earth sphere, these entities were outcast by the rest of consciousness upon this plane and those inner planes within the Earth sphere, within the Earth's surface. And these entities, Bigfoot, do live alone with some communication relating unto beings who have greater understanding and who can work with these entities. That would be subgeniuses, people associated with me. Bob indicated that 85% of the souls upon this plane right now have lived on Maldek. And this is the Luciferian is what they wrote in the records here, but they mean pink consciousness. This is the Luciferian consciousness which is being worked off as part of the Earth's karma. Bob indicated that this is being dissolved. This entire pink Illuminati money-changing trip. I didn't say chip up. Trip. I wouldn't say that word, but they have here written in the records that I said trip. This entire Illuminati money-changing trip, or visual space, is but a replay of the memory of the action which occurred on Maldek, wherein beings were categorized, numbered, and enslaved. Bob indicated that the movement which began 60,000 years ago in Atlantis, was but a recollection of certain states which began on Maldek. Bob suggested that in reference to Bigfoot entities, these Bigfoot entities understand the terror which they instilled in the human creature and the pink which walks on the surface of the earth, and therefore by instinct avoid these creatures, avoid the pinks. Bob indicated that it is this fear which fascinates and terrorizes the pink mind and the subgenius mind up to this point when thinking of the Bigfoot. He suggested that those entities on the inner plane, deep within the earth's surface, are capable of relating to Bigfoot without much fear, without such fear as the pink has on the surface, and without the type of curiosity and hostility as would be felt by the entities, the Bigfeet, on the surface of this plane. Bob suggested that it shall eventually become necessary for entities from this plane to release their hostility and their subconscious fears of these entities, of these Bigfeet. And in this action, the karma that has been held by these entities, the Bigfoot, shall begin to dissolve. And, dig this, Mike, as a result of that, The subgenius shall lie down with the pink, and the pink shall find a place of rest in the arms of Bob.
So forgiveness in the end.
Yep, for what they did on Maldek. Hmm. And this was replayed on Atlantis, and Atlantis was destroyed. But that wasn't a planet. Maldek was a whole planet. That's why
you can see in this writing some of the origins of the Bible itself, can't you?
Yep.
That's beautiful, Bob. Yeah.
Thanks. It's a file. There's been a need for it.
It's very, very, as you can tell, I'm feeling very tired tonight. I'm feeling sluggish, and I need something like that to perk me up a little.
Well, that's great. So let's take some calls, but go to subject to Stang right now.
Oh, you want to go to
well, unless there's a call. Is there a call handy?
No calls yet. Right. We should maybe just reiterate if, every so often, perhaps people do just turn the dial, tune in and are so overwhelmed they don't really know where they are, but... You are at CKLN FM 88.1 in Toronto, and my name is Michael Dyer, here with the J.R. Bob Dobbs, our bi-weekly installment of the Church of the Subgenius, and we do answer your phone calls, your questions, and your queries, and any problems you may have, Bob can answer them all. And
the number is
595-1655, and we'll be here for another 20 minutes or so.
15, 20 minutes, okay.
So you want to go to the Subgenius tape tonight?
Well, not Subgenius, we're wrong. The church was Subgenius, Stan
Version.
Hour
Slack program.
The Hour Slack.
Job down at Kinko's.
Oh, no.
Because you're the devil. They don't want the devil working at Kinko's.
I might be the best layout artist in Knoxville. I might be the most creative layout artist in Knoxville, but no.
Just because you're the devil.
Just because I have so much hate in me. So much hate. That they knew that I wouldn't really enjoy the job. I'd just abuse it to the max till they kicked me out. That's all I wanted.
Oh, I thought everybody hated you, too.
Yeah, well, I just feed off their hate. Because nobody can hate me more than I can hate them.
Hey, I've got that piggy smell. That piggy smell.
Within these words they've spoken, to some, yes, it may be terrifying. To see the truth within themselves frightens most people. They can almost see it as a visible force pressing outwards from the body, straining to escape. Yes, it blinds some to see the sheer power of total, complete, irrefutable logic such as ours, unimpaired in any way by the conspiracy case. For picky programming, just the simple truth of the mathematically perfect yet organically random permutations of the superior rational which shines on us all through Bob. Some it scorches, yes, some it feeds. This we know logically by definition. It cannot be argued. We have discovered through a complex series of experiments various formulae which prove that if Bob indeed exists, then nothing we say can be untrue. Our faith, therefore, is unshakable. It is a whirlpool, a maelstrom which sucks in all evidence to its own contrary and spits it out, cleansed, reshaped into proof not vague scientific guesswork by Earth primitives, but the precise code sequence that triggers in the recipient the knowledge of what it is. This may be unacceptable to some less flexible minds, which are immune to the imagination virus. The antibodies of would-be rational thought may try to consume it, but logically, because of the context in which we're speaking, there is no such thing as rational thought. We believe this logically, without remorse. There is no rationality. There is only pure emotion, pure superstition, pure suggestibility on the part of the human dogs. But Bob wants this. He wants it to continue. He wants Jehovah One, the great mutator, to know that we know he's there, so that we are not smited for our pride. He wishes the tape of the universe to forever roll in the natural way, not edited by evil time gods. And he shall do it, dear friends. Bob shall save our souls. It is, however, recommended that all subgenii do repent on your deathbed, just in case. Is by David Feidler, and I must unfortunately pot down on that because the overlords are listening.
What's the message? Meet me under the atomic bomb.
Oh, my head. We have been spree-stalled.
Yes, you know how that goes.
But now, as our god, Nasty Face, prepares to relax in somnolent slumber. Here we see a stand of plants measuring hundreds of feet in height. Note the rhythmic motions as they sway back and forth. Now their palpated sternum extends. These disgusting ceremonies are performed by the intelligent plants for the visiting mariners. They say every little gesture that these buxom maidens make has a specific meaning. And wouldn't you like to know what it is? Yes, you too can come to the Subgenius Beach Party if you log enough time, enough hours in the church.
Who pays your phone bill for you, punk?
I'm a local caller.
Here is the vivid imaginary universe that exists alongside our mortal world. That magical realm of witches and wizards, ghosts, goblins, gimps and gnomes, fairies, elves, geeks, giants and ogres, where valiant knights battle fearsome dragons, mermaids, splash in sonic seas, and mystical unicorns appear to the pure heart. The whole world of enchantments that has bewitched the human mind and spirit since the dawn of time is present in the Book of the Subgenius. Never before has this splendid universe been unveiled in such rich detail.
Tonight's show is sponsored by the Athener Bookstore. The Athener Bookstore is located at 3619 Perry in Exposition Park, and it carries metaphysical books, gifts, jewelry, and artwork. They're open noon to 11 p.m. Monday through Thursday, noon to 2 a.m. Friday and Saturday, and noon to 8 p.m. on Sunday. The phone number for more information is 821-0707.
That's nothing to do with us.
Sure.
What was it? Perry's Bookstore.
We're not allowed to run ads, are we?
No, it wasn't an ad. It was a mistake.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a caller, Bob.
Oh, great.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on that point that Bob made at the beginning of the show regarding the amnesia factor.
Yeah.
Well, there was a local operation here in the Toronto market which tried to provide a counter-environment, in fact, to achieve some sort of success. And it's called Trivial Pursuit, which is a memory game, of course.
Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah. Trivial Pursuit, you've heard of it?
Yeah.
Right.
That's interesting. So games usually mine the work of the culture.
Do you not see that this was a Rothschild intervention into the North American market?
Oh, yeah, that was a factor in it. I mean, you know, right here in Toronto, the guys were from, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Or this area, anyways, if someone's going to be picky about it in this Ontario area. But,
it had to happen here.
Yeah, now games mime work. Like entertainment mimes the cultural form of work. Entertainment today, software-wise, is torture. Entertainment is torture. It mimes the torturous effect of the electronic bombardment we have to go through in our daily lives, mainly around the computer. So what is the Trivial Pursuit miming? The torture of trying to remember. Right? That's the work, trying to remember.
That's right. But this game is more than just trying to remember. It's a bridge between the Victorian parlor game and the modern-day triviality of the electric environment, where there is no content except the medium itself.
Yeah, so, well, the Victorian parlor was visual space. The game consists of visual cards, so it's...
But the questions that are asked on the card refer to the content, minimal as it is, of the electronic environment. They're primarily based on the TV culture.
Well, the Pinks think that the content is what's significant.
Right.
They don't know the hidden ground, the transforming, metamorphic part of the electric environment. So they concentrate on the visual space. And it's just, we did say that forgetfulness was what people want, but they forgot how to forget. So they thought they could get to forgetfulness by remembering something that doesn't exist, the content.
Something trivial.
Yeah. In other words, if they're going to use their memory, they use something that isn't worth remembering.
Well, what it is drawing attention back to that place in the mind where they're storing information, and they have started to lose contact with the reason for that space in their brain. So they have to come up with a reason to explain to people. It's starting to bother them. Why do we have this place? Why are we collecting data? And then so they came up with a reason, and they sold the game.
Yeah, but the game, on a general level, does mine the information, supposedly, society we live in, right? The information society, the categorizing, the two-bit wit of the computer environment, all right?
Indeed.
But isn't there something I'm missing here about why are the Pinks trying to remember if they're nostalgic for forgetfulness?
Well, they don't want to remember anything important. They just want to reassure people that it is okay to remember.
Ah, so it is a form... Yeah, the game is a form of torture. Ah, that makes sense. That's what I said. Game mimes the work. So it's torture to have a game that involves memory, visual memory.
And it's also torture to have all this memory that you have no outlet for, so they've provided the outlet.
That's right. Very good. That makes sense. There's some pattern recognition there.
Good. Good. Thank you very much, caller.
Just one thing before
he goes.
Ahead, Bob.
We have other callers on the line.
Okay. I just want to point.
Can we get an air traffic controller here and get this sorted out?
It's okay, man. It's okay. The thing is that trivial.
I'll go in a holding pattern if you want.
Okay, but Trivial Pursuit is visual memory, and British society is based on visual space, and therefore, you know, the Rothschilds are quaking up visual space. There's all kinds of other forms of memory, other forms of sensory memory, and that has been explored too in our culture. All right? But unfortunately, the bankers are limited to visual space, so they go with visual games. All right, let's put someone else on. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, caller.
Yeah.
God bless you.
No, Bob. Bob Blast you.
I'm sorry?
Bob Blast you.
Oh, okay.
We got someone else?
I was just lying. I wanted to get that caller off the line because he was annoying me. We may have other calls. Of course, you are listening to the Church of the Subgenius, and although we're not really supposed to, we do welcome your calls here at CKLN. And there's the phone right now. Before we go to the phone, Bob, I wanted to mention, perhaps we have a chance to get back to it. You were asking last week about, or 2 weeks ago, about Karen Elliott.
Yeah.
And about Neoism. And I brought in the guy named Elliot. Yeah, I brought in some material to supplement that. So perhaps we could just cover a bit of that tonight. I could read from my own files this evening.
Great.
As modest as they are, of course.
All right. Yeah, maybe it'll overlap into your program.
Yeah, let's go to this call. Screen this call first. Hi, CKLN.
Hi.
Hi. You got a question for Bob?
First statement.
Do you have a question for Bob? You have to turn on your radio.
No, don't confuse him.
You have to turn it on or turn it off?
Turn it on. Just keep it low so you can hear what we're talking
right,
about.
Right, okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is news to me here.
We're different from the CBC in that respect.
Bob is news.
Okay, here's my question. Actually, it's not a question, it's an observation.
That's all right, that's good.
I wanted to ask either of you, especially Bob, if he'd heard or seen the show emanating from the other church of Bob Dallas in Dallas, which was called Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
That's about addiction to electric information.
Right.
The Last Neighborhood is... It was basically a movie about the anti-Bob, or how the anti-Bob would run a talk show. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I do agree with that. I was also interested in how the Pinks portrayed the audience as being hostile. And I wondered if you had any comments on... Say, if you put yourself in the position of that talk radio host, and why do you think being in Toronto is not your audience as hostile?
Because Canadians are different from Americans, all right, in a subtle way. Americans have no, rather, Canadian pinks have no identity, very low identity. The Americans have a high visual identity. And that identity is based on going out to be alone, to subdue and conquer nature. Therefore, the new nature, which is the electric environment, they regard as a hostile new wilderness. So therefore, they become very violent, because when they go on the air on the talk show, they are going out to be alone. So they're violent. Now, Canadians are slightly violent, because we, within the North American environment, go out to be alone and go home to be social. The Canadians do it in a played-down, low-profile sense because we do not have a high visual identity. Does that make any sense?
Yes. Does that mean by voting for free trade that we put ourselves in limbo? I mean, that we attempt to copy some of that violence?
Let me see. Copy that violence. Yeah.
Do we desire to have to put ourselves in that visual limbo?
Yeah, the American environment is becoming a world environment because the East, though it's based on a right hemisphere tribal identity, is suffering under the fourth world of the electric effect, its own corporate identity crisis. So it's going west. It's putting on private identity, the American identity, as a mask, as an art form. As the American environment then becomes a world environment, everybody has to mime that American psychosis. The point is that the Americans really mean it. The rest of the world doesn't. They're just faking it, and they can adapt to a corporate mode easily. So the Canadians, you're right, are being violent because they're assaulting their basic visual identity with a new costume of role-playing in the American competitive free trade environment. So, yeah, we are going to put on the mask of violence, and unless we get behind my control of the Secret Council of Ten, Canadians are going to suffer and disappear.
Right. I noticed that we attempted to show that the show called Democracy, Struggle for Democracy, the CBC has democracy portrayed on the film, on the television screen, as being in flames.
Yeah, well, the electric environment is fire. It's a retrieval of the element of fire. And democracy is impossible under electric conditions. Democracy in the sense of every man equal under the vote, and every man has a ballot. One vote, one man. So we have, it's interesting that Patrick Watson surfaces now with a great retrieval of 19th century goals as a supposed image and mirror of our Canadian identity. And as it goes up in flames under this emerging with the American world environment, we're going to have a lot more of these nostalgic replays and wish fulfillment of a democratic image.
Did you notice that in that first episode that he gave an example of not being able to remember even a statement that he was making at the time, which was the Athenians' society, democracy, was based on the fact that they had